A man and his wife got up one Sunday morning to get ready for church. The man's wife noticed that her husband wasn't getting ready. He hadn't made any moves at all to get dressed. She said to him, "Honey, why aren't you getting ready for church?" Well, he said, "I don't want to go." And she said, "Well, tell me why you don't want to go." And he said, "Well, I'll give you 3 good reasons for why I don't want to go. One," he said, "the congregation there, they're not all that friendly. 2, not everyone there likes me. And 3, I just don't want to go." "Well, dear," said his wife, "I'll give you 3 good reasons for why you should go. First, the congregation there, they're much more friendly than you say they are. There are some people there who do like you. And 3, you're the minister." I guess we could say if there are ministers these days who don't want to go to church, then we can't really blame the people in the pews for declining attendance, which is happening all across Canada these days. In 1965, more than 600,000 persons attended United Church services, and today, fewer than 120,000 attend services. Baptists and United Churches, Presbyterian churches, in many ways are in decline all across the country. In the cities, in the rural areas, COVID, of course, hit our churches hard. And in post-COVID, some of our churches are down as much as 50%. There's decline in other denominations as well. In the Southern Baptist Church, which is the largest Protestant denomination in the United States, they're losing members every year. And so we might ask, why even bother with church these days when it's in such obvious decline? It's not as if we have to go, do we? Used to say of our Catholic friends, "Well, you have to go to church," but now that's all changing. Many Catholics aren't going either. One Catholic sociologist tells us that Catholics have largely lost the group, the generation between the ages and 35 years of age, called the Gen Y. That applies to many Protestant churches as well. It's not just mainline churches where they're suffering loss. It's actually in evangelical churches as well. And when one writer points out, many of those who are leaving the evangelical churches are younger people who are saying that Christianity is too judgmental, it's too hypocritical, it's dull, it's anti-gay. And then there are those who just dismiss the church as a dying institution. It's irrelevant. It's an outmoded relic from the past, out of touch with the world. And so we're living in a different day for the church. Never have the challenges been greater. And more than one person has asked, what good is the church? Some people seem to believe that the church is just a useless institution. And they say, "Well, we should be levying property taxes on you because after all, you're just open for an hour on Sunday." And so we hear a lot about what's wrong with the church. But the sermon title this morning is not asking that question. People can easily find fault with the church. That's not difficult to do. But I get the impression that some people think and expect the church to be perfect. But you and I have been around a church and the churches for long enough to know that there's no church that's perfect. Never will be, never has been. Let me tell you that when I first went to McPhail Baptist Church as their full-time minister, I had already retired once. I was doing part-time preaching and part-time music. And I remember thinking about going to McPhail Baptist Church. Was I going to take a church where there might be petty disputes about things that don't matter and people were maybe not getting along? If that happened, I thought to myself, why even bother? I would just quit or retire again rather than go through that kind of thing. But at 65, I went to McPhail Church. Now, I had more money then than when I first started out as a minister. So I knew that I could walk away if I had to. That's a good place to be, you know. Many ministers who aren't happy with their churches, they don't have a lot of money, so they can't quit. Maybe that's one reason why churches should pay their ministers more, so they can quit when they should. It might be a blessing for the minister, and in some cases, a blessing for the church. But let me just say how fortunate Linda and I were to be part of the wonderful McPhail Church family. It was our last church, and it was a joy for the entire 8 years we were there. But what I'm saying is, you can have a great church, but we will never have a perfect church. I mean, over the years, I've joined a number of churches in my time. What do I remember? Not one of them was perfect. And why? Well, in part because I joined them. And I'm far from perfect. But I wasn't the only one. Other people joined the same churches at the time, and they weren't perfect either. Let me tell you that one of my churches, it was my first church in the country, Three-Point Charge. We had a man come from Toronto. He came to be our anniversary speaker. He's a wonderful man. He was wise with experience and full of gracious love. He asked me how things were going in the church. I said to him, well, there are some problems, of course. Some people can't seem to get along. Then I said, well, to be honest, there's some people who just don't like each other. And I thought a little longer, and I said, well, to be really honest, there's some people who just can't stand each other. When you get right down to it, he looked at me, and with a smile, he said, well, Ernie, the church is supposed to be a little bit of heaven, but sometimes it's a little bit of hell, and your job is to love the hell out of the people. So let us always remember this, that if the church ever gets to the place where it's perfect, there would be no members. There would be no church. Now that's just the introduction. Let me give you the first point for this morning, what's right with the church. What's right with the church is when we put an emphasis on community. An emphasis on community. Now, let me tell you that in two of the churches in which I served, we had three churches meeting in the same building. In some places, different churches have had to join up and become a community-type church. A community-type church can sound more invitational than our tribal church names. I will build my church, says Jesus in our text from Matthew 16. And one of the ways in which we help Jesus to build his church is by putting an emphasis on community. Because here's the thing. When Jesus said, I will build my church, there was no First Baptist, there was no Second Presbyterian, there was no First United on different corners in Jerusalem, there were no tribal divisions into denominations, there was none of that, but there was community. Bunch of disciples got together at the call of Jesus. Some women followed along. Gradually, they became a community of Jesus' followers. Now, I have many books on my bookshelves that deal with the church. One writer makes this point, that the traditional way of coming into the church is first by believing, then behaving, that is, following the faith of the church, the teaching of the church, and then finally belonging, joining the church. Believing, behaving, and belonging. Now, the writer claims that we have it all wrong, that if we want to bring people into community, we need to reverse that order. First to belonging, then behaving, accepting the teaching of the church, then believing. I think of my last church. There were people in that church community who didn't believe all the things that I taught about Christ. They called themselves atheists or agnostics. But they tried to live their lives in following the teachings of Christ. In other words, they were trying to live what we call a Jesus life, even if they didn't believe everything that the church taught about Jesus. Maybe we ought not to push people into believing the right things. Instead, first make them feel like they belong, even if they don't believe at all. That's one real strength of the United Church. Let me give you a real-life example of that approach. In one of my churches, some young people came into the church. They were Carleton University students. One of them was raised Baptist. He brought his friends with him. One of his friends had never been in a church service in her life. She was 21 or so. She'd been to funerals, she'd been to weddings, but never a church service. She didn't know what to expect. She came one Sunday, The people made her feel super welcome, so she came back the next Sunday, and the next Sunday, and the Sunday after that. When she had been there for a few years, she said to me one day that it took her 2 years of coming to church before she could even say she believed in God. Then it took her another 2 or 3 years to say that she believed Jesus was the Son of God. And then it was not long after that she realized she was a Christian. She was in it for the long haul. She asked to be baptized. Her sister was baptized. Her son was baptized. And some 30 years later, she's still in the church. It was the open-hearted, open-minded community of that church that made her feel like she belonged from the very first day, which resulted in her becoming a committed Christian. And so the church always does the right thing when we put an emphasis on community. That's one thing. Now, here's my second point for this morning. I'm afraid to tell you I actually have 4 points for this morning. I usually only preach 3 or 2 points. Sometimes I have no points, which is known as the pointless sermon. Here's my second point for this morning. That another good thing, another thing that's right with the church, is when we put an emphasis on commitment. First, the emphasis on community, and then an emphasis on commitment. Now, there's that verse from our text in Luke's gospel that says, when Jesus came to Nazareth, where he'd been brought up, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day, as was his custom. As he usually did, says the Bible. Or another translation said, as he always did. Now, people used to say to me when summertime would come, they'd say, now, Ernie, you're going on holiday. Do you go to church when you're on holiday? I was always a little surprised at that question because I love going to church. I hate it when I miss and I can't go to church. But many people today, a surprising number, in fact, they identify as Christians but have little use for the church. They tell me they have quit going. And here's one reason why. When I first went to MacPhail Church, I told the good people there that because I was older, hopefully a little wiser, I'm not sure about that, but I said I would be less inclined to put up with what we call the stupid stuff that goes on in too many churches. I can assure you, MacPhail Church was not a church like that. But there's just too much of that that sometimes goes on in churches. People say, I have enough drama in my life during the week, in my work life, in my family life. I'm not willing to put up with some of the silly dramas that sometimes go on in many of our churches. Now, friends, I could tell you stories, but we haven't got all day. I'll put them in a book someday, maybe change the names, and then you can read all about them. We probably don't have time, but maybe I'll give you a little preview now if you just don't tell anyone. Let me tell you, I was working in one of my churches in my office, and the ladies' missionary circle luncheon meeting was going on that day. It happens every month, and I had a standing invitation to join that group for lunch, which I did from time to time. But this one time, one of their members knocked on the door of my office, and she said, she couldn't invite me to the lunch that day. She was embarrassed about it, felt awkward about it. She said that there was one member of the circle, a newer person, but she'd come to the church a long time but didn't go to the missionary circle every time, and she was upset at me for some reason. I'm not really sure what it was. And so with great embarrassment, she said, I can't ask you to the missionary circle lunch. And so I was disinvited to a luncheon. Now, I've been invited to many luncheons, but I've never been disinvited to a luncheon in my own church. People don't want to be committed to a church where silly and stupid stuff sometimes goes on. We can't afford this in our churches today. Christian commitment is a serious thing. I think of the elderly lady who was at the post office. She wanted to get some stamps. It was a long lineup. A man tapped her on the shoulder. He said, excuse me, ma'am, but there's a stamp machine out in the lobby there. You can get your stamps from the machine. You don't have to wait in this long line. I know, said the dear old lady, but the stamp machine doesn't talk to me. It doesn't ask me, how's your arthritis? How are you doing today? Christian commitment is more than a commitment to Christ. It's more than a commitment to the church. It's also a commitment to each other. Because as someone has said, the only church you can be committed to is the one that has faces and names. So that's another thing that's right with the church. The emphasis on community, the emphasis on commitment. Now here's something else to think about this morning. Another thing that's right about the church is when we put an emphasis on compassion. On compassion. Now let me tell you that in my first church in Winchester, there was a dear old lady there. She fell asleep for every sermon I preached for 3 years straight. That must have been Betty, was it? I have to admit that at first I took it personally until some of the members said, no, she fell asleep for every minister's sermon. But here's the thing about this woman. After the sermon was over and I'd be standing at the church door greeting the parishioners who were leaving, she would shake hands and she would say the same thing to me every Sunday, which was, wonderful sermon, Pastor, if only we could live it. Never failed. She hadn't heard a word I said. But I guess a comment like that is as safe as any other comment if you've been asleep for the sermon. Now, in her text from Luke, Jesus is in the synagogue. He's about to give a sermon. It's from Isaiah 61, talking about helping the poor, binding up the brokenhearted. In other words, it was a sermon on compassion. And he preached such a great sermon that at the end, the people said, wow, what wonderful words that he has, gracious words that come out of his mouth. But then you see, Jesus didn't know when to quit. He went on. He told the people that the sermon wasn't just meant to be listened to. He said, you aren't living the words of the sermon. He's telling some of his listeners that they lack compassion. And I can tell you, no one shook Jesus' hand at the end of the sermon and said, wonderful sermon, Jesus, if only we could live it. Instead, they turned on him and tried to throw him off a cliff. There are many different denominations, many different kinds of churches. To a person outside the church looking in, it could be somewhat confusing. But let me tell you, friends, there should never be any confusion in the church when it comes to showing love and compassion. Because it's not a United Church thing. It's not a Baptist Church thing. It's not a Presbyterian Church thing or a Lutheran Church thing. It's a Jesus thing. And even though Jesus preached that sermon more than 2,000 years ago, the church always does the right thing when we share his love and compassion with others. Now, here's my last point for this morning. Let me conclude in saying that what's right about the church and when we put an emphasis on Christ. The church always does the right thing when we emphasize the person of Jesus Christ. When Jesus asked Peter, who do people say that I am? Someone had said that was a question of popular opinion. But then when Jesus asked Peter the second question, who do you say I am? That was a question of personal conviction. Who do you say I am? Asked Jesus of Peter. And that's the question we have to ask ourselves every Sunday. Who is Jesus for our lives? As someone has said, it only takes a moment to make a decision for Christ, but it takes the rest of our lives to keep on deciding for Christ and keep on deciding to be loving and compassionate in his name. And so remember this, friends, even though many churches are in decline, some will fail. Some are failing now. Nevertheless, Christianity is still the fastest growing religion in the world. Thousands come to Christ every day. And so the Church of Christ, it will never die. And why? Because Jesus said, nothing will ultimately prevail against it. Let me close with this. A canvasser went out to solicit funds for a new church building. He went to a home, and the member of the church in that home refused to give any funds. He said, no, I'm not going to give. The church is too expensive. It's costing us too much. In reply to the man's objection, the canvasser told this story. He said, Jack, about 25 years ago, a son was born to me. From the moment he came into this world, he was an expense. There was the hospital. There was food. There was toys, music lessons, books, shoes, later an allowance for movies and dances and so on. Finally, my son went to college, and the expenses, they mounted. Sometimes I thought the boy was costing me more than was really necessary. But at about the time he was ready to graduate from college, he got sick. and he died. The canvasser paused to clear his throat, and then he said, "And you know, Jack, that boy has not cost me a cent since. Not one cent." And then he added, "The church will cost us nothing if we don't have it." What's right with the church? The Church of Christ always does the right thing when we emphasize community, compassion, and commitment, and do it all in the name of Christ. Thanks be to God. Amen.